Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So we heard about this decision made at Cabinet yesterday that Ireland will join the EU's Asylum and Migration Pact. Now, the full details aren't yet agreed, but we do know that the pact aims to deliver more efficient returns for unsuccessful applicants, accelerated processing for those from safe countries and those with false documents, and there'll be a new solidarity mechanism to support countries which take a disproportionate share of asylum applicants. So what does all that mean? How will it work in practice? Well, I'm joined now by immigration lawyer Cathal Malone. You're very welcome, Cathal. Thanks for coming in. What do we know about this new pact?
Well, what's interesting, Claire, is maybe a little bit less than we might expect. This is something that's been negotiated within the European Union for the last number of years. There was political agreement reached across all the heads of government in Europe in December to proceed. Now, interestingly, Ireland and Denmark actually have to opt into this measure, and Cabinet has decided to do that this week. But there are still technical negotiations going on around the exact text. However, what we do know is that, for example, there's going to be a mandatory 3-month processing time for international protection or asylum applicants in certain categories, crucially not just, as you said, safe countries, but people who have got no papers or false papers on arrival, which on the most recent figures is 85% of people arriving in Dublin Airport, would be in that process. Now, it's interesting to know how that's going to work, because currently, as we all know, the processing times for applicants in general are over a year. And we now have 13,500 people. And it seems like in excess of 90% of those will now be subject to a mandatory 3-month processing time and a further 3 months thereafter to be deported.
So you're asking, how is this going to work in practice?
Before the pandemic, we had an average of about 3,500 people per year claiming asylum in this country. Since the end of COVID, it's been 13,500, a 10,000 person per annum jump. Now, given that level of a jump, the state at the moment cannot, as we see, accommodate them. But also there's very real issues with, for example, delays in scheduling interviews due to lack of civil servants. There's a lack of office space in Mount Street. And crucially, there's a lack of immigration lawyers in this country to represent people. Now, there's currently a shortage to represent these people if the process takes 12 months. And I'm really unsure how these people will have any effective access to legal advice if they cut that into a quarter.
Can I ask you specifically about prosecution for people who don't have passports or don't have documents when they arrive here? Because we are seeing more of those cases in our courts right now, aren't we?
We are indeed. Until a couple of years ago, this really wasn't happening. There are provisions where you can be prosecuted for failure to produce on demand a passport or other ID document to a member of an Garda Síochána. Now, that was never used in respect of asylum seekers. Under the Refugee Convention 1951, there's a specific provision which says people should not be prosecuted for entering a country illegally if they're claiming asylum, and they shouldn't be prosecuted for having no documents or fake documents. And the reason for that is there's no such thing in Ireland as an asylum visa. There's no right way to come here to claim asylum. If you were to walk into the Irish embassy in any country on earth and say, I want to come to Ireland to claim asylum, they would say no. So obviously people have to get here by some method or manner, and that tends to be on false documentation. And it really does seem to be a politically motivated move now that prosecutions are commencing in an effort.
So given that those rules are in place since 1951, did you say?
Those rules are in international law, but they've never been put into Irish law. However, the understanding was that Irish law was always applied in line with those rules. However, now that that is not happening, it's very, very concerning. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these prosecutions challenged in the superior courts, because it is something which is deeply concerning that people are being prosecuted for claiming asylum ultimately.
Okay, so why would people be arriving here without documents? Can you explain that side
of
it to us?
So if we take somebody who's coming from a country which either has no functioning central government like Somalia, or which doesn't issue passports like the Taliban in Afghanistan at the moment, they may simply not be able to obtain a national passport, and therefore they have to go to, you know, whether you want to call it an agent or a trafficker or a smuggler, to obtain false papers. Equally, they may be from a country where they can get a passport, but they can't get a visa to come to Ireland, and therefore they may need a fraudulent visa or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. Now, these documents are expensive to produce. And so what tends to happen is the agent will come on the plane with this person. And then when the plane is in the air on the way to Ireland, the agent says, hand me back that passport because I can use that again, maybe change the picture. And so when the person gets off the plane at Dublin Airport, they don't have the document. But when people say that the documents have been destroyed, you'd wonder how that could even work, because as we all know, you can't even light a cigarette on an airplane, not to mind burn a passport. And if they're flushing it down the toilet, then Ryanair would have them all there waiting for them at Dublin Airport.
So what's going to happen now, and what is happening more frequently, is that these people are being put into the court system.
Yes, and As I say, the figures from February of this year are that 85% of people arriving in Dublin Airport are in this category. So, I mean, if we're going to prosecute 85% of 13,500, that's quite going to be a huge burden on the court system to begin with. But also, it really is very unfair to leave these people with criminal records and circumstances where they may ultimately be genuine refugees.
Okay, now, we have heard an analysis from a range of politicians, economists, other commentators, which is that the asylum system is being used as a backdoor by those who might be more accurately described as economic migrants. And as a result of that, you have genuine asylum seekers who are stuck in this system that you have described to us. What do you make of that charge?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that if you look at the numbers, at first instance last year, 40% of applications were granted. On appeal, between a quarter and a third of the negative decisions were then overturned. So we're not looking at a situation here where 5% or 10% of people are genuine. Even on the Minister for Justice's own figures, it's roughly 50-50. But actually, if we look at talking about people languishing in the system for longer when they're genuine, that's exactly what they're proposing to do with the new Asylum and Migration Pact. Because it was always understood that you would speed up the processing, historically, of people whose applications were more likely to be genuine. Let's say you're Afghan or you're Syrian, so that these people were not languishing in direct provision for longer than they needed to, they could get on with their lives and get status. Mm-hmm. But under the new Asylum Migration Pact, the only people who are going to get done in 3 months are those who are unlikely to qualify, which logically means that the people who are likely to qualify, your Afghans and your Syrians, are going to spend much longer in the process waiting behind the people who are not meritorious. And that seems to me to be turning things on its head.
Yeah, we also have this solidarity clause, which yes. I mentioned at the beginning. So you would imagine that countries in Europe's southern and eastern borders, so Greece, Italy, others too, that they're getting a disproportionate number of migrants, and that we will either have to accept more of those people or pay in under this solidarity clause to help the countries that are accepting them. Is that how you see that working?
Well, that's how it's supposed to work. So on current figures, if we're taking our fair share based on population, GDP and the number of migrants already here, it's about 650 more per annum than we're currently taking. So not a huge number. Although it does go to show that even with the current supposed crisis, we are below what we should be taking to average it out things across Europe. And if we don't take those 650, then it's a €20,000 per head amount that we pay, which is supposed to go to be used by countries like Italy and Greece to support these people in those countries. Now, my concern about that is I wonder whether if that money is given to Greece or Italy, will it be used to build higher fences, to pay for the Coast Guard to push boats back, etc.? Or will it genuinely be used to accommodate and feed the refugees
in
question?
So you're saying that we should be asking very serious questions about where that money goes to.
Absolutely.
But for a very wealthy country, as an Ireland is, right now, it is a way to deal with this, isn't it? I mean, surely that's what our government might be looking at here when we're in an accommodation crisis.
Well, if we take the fact that Greece and Italy and countries like Greece and Italy are taking hundreds of thousands of people per year and they're much poorer than we are, I do wonder whether the fact that we have an underlying housing crisis is a good enough reason for us to shirk our responsibility and essentially pay to evade what they're having to deal with. I mean,
so what else do we do, though? I mean, housing crisis is there and it is real.
Minister O'Gorman has come out with a proposal to Cabinet to convert a lot of the unused office accommodation in Dublin to accommodate some of these people. Now, this is something which a lot of people have been saying for quite a long time during the current crisis. It's something that could and should have been done. And people get somewhat surprised when I say that and say, well, hang on now, are the lawyers and the NGOs and what my taxi driver this morning called the do-gooders all in favour of that? But the thing about it is people are currently sleeping on the streets and anything must be better than that. And if we can convert some of that space into dignified conditions for people, then first of all, I think that it's better than the alternative we're currently seeing, which is nothing being provided essentially. Mm. And second of all, it might take some of the heat out of what's currently going on where, I mean, people talk about the last hotel in the town being used. I mean, there a lot of space was built, particularly in Dublin and Cork and other cities during the pandemic to be used for office space, which looks will never be used because of the shift to work from home.
And that conversion might be something that could be done quite quickly,
It would seem so. And whatever problems are there are surely surmountable, whether it's planning or logistical or anything else, because as I say, at the moment we're seeing people who are on the streets and I mean, it's a wonder we haven't yet had a fatality.
What do you think when you hear people saying unvetted people are coming into this country?
Well, the first thing to say is that people are vetted insofar as we can. So when you claim international protection, you're fingerprinted. That's run through Interpol, Europol and a database called Eurodac, which is across all EU countries, which checks if you've applied for a visa or asylum in any of those countries. And obviously also as part of your international protection claim, there's a very detailed forms to be filled out. There's a person personal interview lasting hours, and everything that you say will be checked insofar as it can against documentary records. But the reality is, and I think rather thankfully, every person on earth is not in some sort of centralized database with their fingerprints and all the details about them. And I give it 5 minutes until it was hacked if that were the case. So when people say that people are being unvetted, I'd like to say to them, what more would you want to be done? And often people will say, well, if nothing more can be done, then they shouldn't be coming. And I think that at that point, you see, it's not coming from a place of sincerity necessarily.
Okay, well, Cathal, thank you very much for coming in and explaining all of that to us. That's Cathal Malone, who is an immigration lawyer. We'll be back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.